Content warning. This podcast contains depictions of and discussions on gender-based violence. Audience discretion is advised.
I wasn't allowed to leave the house, but I enrolled the kids in school, and the bus stop was like just like I could see it from the window. And I was always arguing, like, why am I not allowed to leave?
Imagine being a victim of intimate partner violence.
The people at Leaside were like, I've never heard of this, I've never seen this, but if you leave, we have to report it.
You may have escaped and are now bravely rebuilding your life, hoping that the justice system is going to protect you and find justice for the crimes you have been a victim of.
I found out later on that he had been married once and then he'd been married twice, which I never knew it.
You may have had bruises, photos, text messages, and witnesses, all compelling evidence.
So he assaulted both of his ex-wives, and they both left, and he went to jail and stuff.
Yet, the perpetrator is still free and is still a threat.
That's where I realized that it wasn't that the Leaside wasn't letting me leave or community service wasn't letting me leave. They were trying to protect me.
And in a shock realization, you soon discover that the system you thought was designed to keep you safe is being used to protect the person you fear the most. Welcome to Somebody Must Say These Things. I'm your host, Ginger McPhee. This episode is about the justice system and its role in gender-based violence. We will paint a very personal picture of the huge gaps and traumatic damage it can do, using the story of Mary in her own words.
This is another like huge red flag for anybody out there. It's if they don't introduce you to any family, there's a problem. If they don't have one friend, there's a problem. Like, and I never thought anything of it because I've always been like kind of social and stuff. And then I became totally antisocial because I was out in the middle of nowhere, not working, taking care of a house, some cows and pigs at one time, you know, and chickens at one time in a huge garden. Like, I didn't have a license, so he was okay with all that. It was until I started being like, this is not cool.
This is Mary, which isn't her real name. She lived in rural Cape Breton with her daughter, her then partner, and his son. Living on an isolated farm, she was forced to endure vicious abuse.
He would always take it out on his son. It was constant, so that's where a lot of fights started, where I'd stand in the middle. He was always picked at his son, like, just, it was horrible. And so I would get in there, and then I'd fight with him because it was a way to protect the kid. That day was the attack, and it wasn't expected at all, and it wasn't even like the biggest attack that he's ever had against me, but all I could think in my head was, why am I letting this happen?
Trapped and isolated, Mary felt like she had few options, but an interaction with Child Protection Services led to the situation reaching boiling point.
CPS got involved because he moved one of his nieces into the house with us. She went to school and she went and said that we were drinking, which we were at the house. And so CPS got involved and we went to the community services and I was talking to this lady that is like a child service worker. And we both went into an office together and she looked at me and she had known him. And she said to me, do you know his history? And I was like, well, yeah. I'm like, I've known him for a while. Like, I know that, you know, he has exes that they broke up. I'm sure, like, everyone breaks up. It's not good. So she took me out of the room to talk to me by herself. And she asked me again if I knew. And she couldn't tell me anything because that's, like, breaking confidentiality. We went on and went back in the room with him. And she said, we're going to take the kids away from you guys. And I was like, well, what are you going to do? Or I could leave with him and that would be fine. But I couldn't take with me. But if I went to this shelter in Port Hawkesbury called Leaside, I was allowed to take Amble with me, and neither child would go to foster care, but he was to be removed from the situation.
Mary and the children were moved to a transition house, a safe space where she could begin to process her trauma.
It's a huge thing, like, to be able to talk to each other and know that it's not just you, and it's not just you that's hiding it either. It's like there's a lot of people. Once you start talking about it, people tend to talk back to you, and they start opening up, and then they realize, well, if she came forward, well, maybe then I can come forward. It's like when you first feel comfortable, and like you feel like yourself, and you can finally say things, and nobody's judging.
Mary was now in relative safety. However, it wasn't long until things shifted. While visiting her partner at the home, things turned threatening. Mary fought back, but the mood became so sinister, she knew she had to get immediate help.
While he was doing it, it wasn't the same because the kids weren't there, so I couldn't scream for help. We have no neighbors anywhere. I bent his finger like fully back, and he like just stopped all of a sudden. He looked at me and I looked at him and I was just like, what are you doing kind of thing? And he was like trying to be nice to me the whole way out and stuff. And then I was still at this time, like, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And then I, in my head, was like, what would happen if he wanted to take it further with nobody around? There was no kids to like walk in and, you know, break it up or, you know, like nothing there. So I was like, okay, well, I just knew I had to get myself out of there. My phone was in the truck still, so I had no way of even, and he had already ripped that landline phone off of the like wall and stuff, like, or like disconnected it, you know, pulled the plug up. And so I had no way, like, there's nothing I could call or do. And I'm just like, oh, this is it for me. Like, I thought it was done. Like, I was like, oh, okay, just play along with whatever as much as you can. And I knew if I really, really fought back and I escalated it more, then it would have got worse. So I gave him a kiss. I went to the truck. My phone was there, locked all the doors, I called my friend. So I called her and I'm like, what's in? She's like, oh, 4500. I said, okay. So I called them and then they stayed on the line with me for a while and I'm just shaking and he's coming towards the Jeep and or towards the truck and then I'm like not letting him in, obviously. And then he walked towards the Jeep and then he walked back towards the truck and then he seen I was still on the phone and he obviously knew what was going on at that point. And then he walked back to the Jeep and he opened up the like hatch and took out the spare tire underneath the thing where the spare tire goes and pulled out a pack of cigarettes, which I didn't even know he smoked, and just started smoking and just looking at me smiling. And then I pulled out and I left. And as I was leaving, the cop called me. There's a petrol can and then there's an overpass. And as I was going up the overpass, I answered it. It was a private number. He's like, this is what's going on? Are you okay? But like, he just asked me a bunch of questions. And he said, are you able to come into the cop station? I said, yeah.
While at the police station, Mary was introduced to an organization called the Naomi Society.
I gave my statement and stuff, and he was like, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine, you know. And then he gave me the Naomi number, Naomi Society, which I got connected with Nicole, who has been like my number one supporter. She comes to court with me. We had no place to go or anything like that. So she was trying her best, like going like low income housing, like even housing, like everything that like subsidized everything that like she was doing it. And it was nervous talking to her before. And now it's like, I enjoy it. Like now I'm like, okay, like let's check in. You know, like when she calls for that, people are like, you don't mind? I'm like, no, I'm like, she's just like family now. Like it's different. It feels amazing. Like you're not alone anymore. Like I was alone for so long. I've never had cheerleaders before. Like they're like, yeah. And it's not pressure to do anything either. They're always like, if you want to, like I was like, I'll do whatever now just to like stop this happening to start trying to stop it from happening to somebody else. Or like just to know that there is a need for all this. There's more of a need. Like these people are like angels and like, yeah, like they come and they all surround you and protect you.
You may think that this is the end of Mary's story, that her abuser faced justice and a family could move on from the trauma and rebuild their lives. But it's not. This is just the beginning of a new battle, one that involved lawyers, judges, court dates, and what feels like an endless revisit of trauma. This is why, in the 2023 Mass Casualty Report, the recommendations were made that, quote, police and Crown attorneys and our counsel carefully consider the context of intimate partner violence and particularly coercive control when criminal charges are being contemplated against survivors of such violence. Also, police investigations and public prosecutions should engage subject matter experts to help ensure that the dynamics of intimate partner violence are understood. For Mary, this did not happen.
The justice system has, I believe, failed me completely.
Feeling that justice had just slipped through her fingers, Mary decided to share her experience with a reporter from the Halifax Chronicle Herald. The judge overseeing her case was also interviewed.
In there, like, was like, he's not a threat to the community. Like, all my thoughts were like, I am part of the community. He's definitely a threat to me. This is the judge saying it, like, in black and white, in the Chronicle Herald. Like, I am the fucking community.
Our legal system is not built to protect victims of gender-based violence. The National Action Plan to End Gender-Based Violence calls for a responsive justice system. It states that opportunities for action include enhancing the justice system's support and measures to prevent re-victimization and recurring trauma. And from Mary's experience, the system just added new opportunities for harm.
We were supposed to go to court on a Monday, like last year, and I got the phone call Friday. After I'd already taken my daughter to the courthouse, and I got a man from Victim Services, and Nicole, of course, came, and we showed her so she wasn't nervous going in because she needs to testify as well. Yeah, we did it all, and then on that Friday, they called and they said, don't even, you're okay, don't bother. It's all like a game. They've always been wanting me to back down because D- knows me as a person who was always just like, okay, no problem. Like, I'll do it. I was a yes person all the time. Like, it was always like, okay, I'll figure it out. I just knew that it was already out there and I didn't want part of the story out. I wanted the whole thing out. I don't want it to be like, oh, well, it was just this little part. And me always thinking, why didn't I tell it all? Like, you might as well if you start it, because then people just, they just assume that, like, that's all it was. Like, oh, well, that's not that bad.
Returning to the government's own National Action Plan to End Gender-Based Violence, it states that action should be taken to increase accessibility and improve confidence in the Canadian justice system. But in this case, it failed. Even when her abuser broke the conditions of his release, the legal system didn't respond to Mary's fears.
After gave me that Protection of Property Act, I said, well, give one to him. You know, I said, tell him he's not allowed near me or anything like this. So then he stayed away, and that's when he started coming. Well, one day I caught him there, and because I was pulling in to feed the cows, and I was in the work truck and we had a driveway and it was pretty much like the width was the length of the truck. So I parked straight across the end of the driveway. I seen that he was in there. I don't know what he was doing. I didn't know if he was there. I didn't care. Like, you're not supposed to be here. So I called cops. I parked at the end of the driveway and he came and I seen him walking towards me. First he tried to open the door and it was locked. And then he started banging on the window. And I was like, he's like, whoa, going this. And I'm still on the phone with him. I'm like, this is what he's doing right now. And so he walked back to his truck and then he started like honking at me, like trying to get out of the driveway. And I wasn't moving anywhere. I'm like, you can smash the truck. I said, I'm sure the company has insurance. That's all I'm thinking in my head. I'm like, go ahead. Like, at this point, the cops are called. They're going to be on their way. So he went up, down around me in the front of the truck and drove through a ditch and came out. And it was a truck that I didn't recognize because it was a black truck and he usually drove a maroon truck. So I get out after he went around the front and went towards the end. I got out of the truck and I was looking at the license plate and I read it off to the officer or whoever dispatch it, whoever answers the phone. And then so they typed it in the machine. And so then I was like, okay, this is fine. He's gone. So I continued to go into water the cows and feed them and do whatever. And then I was just, you know, I probably would have went in the house, but I started feeling this weird feeling like, what if he just seen me come and he's here? He broke conditions. Just because he's getting other people to do it, that's still one of his conditions. So I called my friend. I'm like, stay on the phone with me for now, just because I'm out here. And she's like, get the hell out of there. Who cares? You know, the cows can go a day. So I did it as quick as I could and I got out and I left. And then the cops called and they said, and there was a construction zone or whatever coming. And as I was leaving, I seen coming back out. And then a few cars up, there's a patrol car or whatever was there. And I was like, he's in front of you guys. Like, he's like going back to the house. So now all in my head, I'm thinking, was he going back to pick up? Was he there the whole time? He said in court straight up that sent him out there. So in court, two people have admitted that this man sent him there. That's breaching the conditions. And she said, Judge Rover said he never broke any conditions. I was like, what are you talking? And of course, when it's me sitting there, I'm not allowed to talk. I have no lawyer. I didn't qualify for legal aid. She just overlooked everything.
Mary's happy ending is still not on the horizon, and her battle to feel safe from her former partner continues.
This is not something I want to do. It sucks. Like, it's time consuming. It's like, it brings everything up. It's hard. It's emotional. It's hard on my kid. Like, it's everything. Like, it puts a big pause on your life. Like, my life has been on hold because this is a fight that is worth fighting, I think. I wish more people had the support. I wish there was more support out there for people and that would feel comfortable coming forward. Like, I'm very lucky that I had an officer who pointed me to the Naomi Society, who like gave me all the support and like just almost like hugs, you know, like it was just like you felt warm and good. And then an amazing boss. I don't know what I would have done. I wouldn't have came forward, honestly, if there was no Naomi Society, if there wasn't some officer who knew about it, if my boss didn't continue to support me and employ me. Like, because a lot of people would have just said, you know, sorry.
Unless we continue to apply pressure to our leaders and government, we will never see change within the justice system to address gender-based violence. Until we do, it's left to people like Mary to continue her own battle within the legal system.
I often think, like, why didn't I just leave and not do anything? Because it would have been a hell of a lot easier. But in the long run, would it have been? Because he's not going to stop until he gets stopped. So it either stops here and they do something about it, or they do nothing about it and wait for something even worse to happen to somebody. And that's what's going to happen. No doubt in my mind that if nothing happens to this man, that it's just going to be worse for the next person.
As of February 2nd, Mary's abuser's resentencing was postponed again, this time until June. This latest delay has meant that the courts have drawn out Mary's journey to justice for over 2 years. If you've heard some of your own story in this episode and feel a need to reach out for some support, please find your local shelter at thans.ca. Also, if this podcast and its message resonates with you and you want to help us in our mission, reach out to your local transition house to hear what their needs are. Each shelter has their own website that you can get directed to from thans.ca.